Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
If you had time to just scout one thing from another team, what would it be? What's most important? And I guess, would it depend on level?
Yeah, I think for sure. Well, as the game gets better, the game gets faster. And so the speed of the game is the thing that really, you want to be able to put as many defenders, especially a block, in front of a hitter as you can. And as the game gets faster, that gets to be more and more difficult. And so what you want to do for your blockers is kind of reduce the number of decisions or choices that they have to make. And so I would say at higher levels, understanding distribution would be maybe the most important. This is how they want to play on good passes. And giving our block a little bit of a head start to the more probable spots that they're going to defend. And then maybe at the younger levels, it's directional stuff. It's, hey, here's the direction that these players want to hit the ball. And the play is happening maybe slow enough that a good blocker will be able to kind of, we should be able to get a decent form block up, but it's where does that block go and where does this hitter want to hit the ball? And so directional stuff is maybe, I think, maybe it isn't more important, but it's more practical per se at the youth levels, and just distribution information, where they like to set it and where they're going to go. And in the end, it's funny, you watch the world championships unfold and you think it's, these are the best volleyball teams in the world and the most sophisticated offenses, and they're able to execute, in ways that, that can't be executed at any other level. And in the end, they still just set their best player more than anything. So if you scout against Serbia, it's like they're going to set their opposite, Boskovic, 2 out of every 3 balls kind of thing, And so it's crazy when it comes down to it. And that's what happened, right? Is it Italy, I think, beat China in the semifinal, and they set 2 players maybe 75% of their offense, and one player was 50%, another player was 25%, and then the whole rest of the team maybe got the other 25%. And so Ganu swung at 80 sets or something in a 5-set match against China, and then Silla was the other outside. Ganu was their opposite. Silla was their outside, and she swung at maybe 40 something, and then everybody else had like 18, 15, 16, kind of thing. And so in the end, it's scouting reports, it's like, you don't have to be too much of a genius to figure out distribution. It's in the end, they're going to set their best players a lot. And so that, I think that stays true at almost any level.
What do you like to scout in match? And if you do scout in match, and if you do you make adjustments, or is that too small a sample size?
So that's the other thing that I think creates a real challenge for coaches, is in match adjustments. And one of the things I like to kind of always be telling myself in the back of my head is, hey, you've prepared, you've done the work, you know what you want to do, stick to the plan. Don't start chasing these anomalies or these one-off kind of things. And so if there's a player that's really, maybe we've got them strong cross court and suddenly they've hit 3, 4, 5, 6 balls down the line, then I think you have to start reacting to that. But the tendency is, hey, a couple balls go down the line, or you get beat down the line, two or three times, and now suddenly we're moving things around, and so I'm always really slow to want to make too many adjustments, because I always feel like, hey, if we've put in all this work to come up with a good game plan, just stick with the plan, execute the plan. The trouble is match happens so fast, and there's points just add up in a hurry, and then suddenly the set's over. And so the opportunity to really get, meaningful trends, it's tough. And that's one of the other things I think that really is challenging in coaching in general is knowing when to make an adjustment, whether it be a sub or whether it be a change in the way you're trying to defend somebody. And oftentimes, it's easy if you're getting crushed, right? Like if you're getting blown out or if a player's having a terrible night, then it's really easy to make that sub or to, hey, we're going to make a switch in the way we're defending if the data is giving you these obvious answers. But there have been so many times where I've looked back as a coach and I've gone, man, I really wish I would have made this sub at this point in the match. I wonder why I didn't do that, because I did it too late and this player came in and played great, and I wish I would have had him in there earlier playing great, or, man, this was a mistake. We should have gotten this player in. And what you find is you look back and you go, well, it was like 21-22, or we were down by two, or we were up by one with this other player in the match, and things were going okay. We were hanging in there, or we were maybe even had a lead. Why would I have made that switch? Or I wasn't compelled to make that switch at the time. And so that's, I think, one of the big challenges of coaching is just there are these kind of – oftentimes the changes you want to make aren't slapping you in the face. They're subtle. They're nuanced. And you don't always recognize them in the moment. And so, again, as much as you can do to have a team that can operate independently of the need to make those changes, it's like, yeah, we wish that we had blocked this player a little bit more in his or her line, but we didn't. But it turns out that we have this defender that's down the line that even though we didn't block in the spot we'd like to, she saw it and she got in a really good spot to dig and was able to make up for those deficiencies. Maybe we didn't do the best job defending her at the net, but man, our players saw what was happening. They got in the right spots and did a good job in the back row kind of thing. And so again, you try to build systems that are robust and are flexible and can play even though maybe the rules that we've established or the defaults that we established aren't exactly the right ones, but the players see enough of the game well to overcome that.
Cool. And moving into some world champs takeaways, how is the game evolving at the highest level of the women's game?
So the couple things that one was the serving. I think I remarked about it. Just, you've seen, I think you see a lot of really good coaches at the international level. And I think there have been a few teams that have kind of set the pace. I think USA for a long time has been a model for a lot of teams. And one of the things they did really, really well starting in about 2014, maybe even as early as 2012, probably about 2014, though, they really put an emphasis on becoming a better serving team. And they were lights out serving and passing. And that's one of the things I thought that Netherlands, Jamie came in and he did a great job getting them to be a better serving team. And a lot of these countries have followed suit, and the serving is remarkably good. It's remarkably consistent. It's remarkably tough. Like I said, just everybody hits these flat, fast serves that float every single time. And that's one of the things, if you watch a regular volleyball match, just watch how many balls spin when they're served. And when you go watch these international matches, man, a lot of balls are just moving like crazy. And that Mikasa, of course, is tough to pass it to begin with, but it makes for really challenging reception environment. And so there's that one. Then again, for a long, long time, one of the kind of truths as far as the data went was that back row attack was pretty inefficient. And this is, again, another kind of interesting coaching dilemma. I think with the limited amount of time that you have with the athletes, you ask yourself, you know, if I've got X amount of time, how much of it do I want to spend trying to develop new skills versus how much time do I want to try perfecting or maybe expanding on existing skills? And so teams, I think, if you watched or if you look at the data, for a long time, a back row attack was an inefficient play at almost all levels of the sport. I think it still is for lots and lots and lots of teams. And I can safely say that there aren't a lot of teams where your back row is going to be a more efficient play than your front row. But there were some circumstances in which back row attack was more efficient. And then I think I saw maybe more teams than ever having success setting players out of the back row. And I don't know that it was that there was enough success to warrant the volume that some teams were setting. There were a couple teams in the pools where I'd watch and they would set so much back row. And I'm thinking, what in the world are you guys doing? Just, this is a terrible play for you and you keep setting it. But then there were some teams where it turned out to be a really, really good play. And so that was one of the trends I think that came out too, was the back row is becoming a better play. And I'm not sure if it's just the athletes are becoming more comfortable, running that play, or if teams are devoting a little bit more time to developing it. I'd like to think that the ability or the athletic ability of volleyball players, it's not like there's this, you know, new crop of genetic freaks that have come on the scene that suddenly are that much more physical than there have been for the last two decades, you know, but maybe there's a little bit of that too. There's some really good big physical kids right now that make back row attack a little bit more viable option. But in any case, really, really good serving and really, really and more efficient back row attack are kind of two trends that I think I saw.
Do you think for college coaches, is it worthwhile for them to study some of these trends and try to emulate them, or are the athletes just too superior?
It's a trap you can for sure fall into, you know. Hey, look at look at Serbia playing out of the back row, and look at how fast USA is running their go balls. And you know, it's I think it's instructive to kind of push you in a direction, maybe, but it's for sure a trap you can fall into. Bill Neville, who's a longtime coach with USA programs, this great, good guy, says, don't do tactically what you can't do technically. That's kind of one of his maxims. Don't do tactically what you can't do technically. And so that's one of the things you fall into as a coach, you know, high school coach or a college coach, and you're watching these athletes go and you're thinking, ooh, you know, I want to implement that on my team. But a lot of it is athlete dependent and ability dependent. And so that's kind of going back to where I referenced before. It's sometimes hard to know, if you have limited amount of time, what's the biggest return on my investment that I can get? Should I become a better serving team, or should I try to develop a back row, or should I try, you know, it's like, how do I want to spend my time? And these are hard questions to answer as a coach. And more than anything, you kind of want to use the data that your own team is generating And then maybe there just has to be some kind of instinct where you go, yeah, you know, I got a feel for this, and this seems like a play that we could run pretty good given the athletes that we have, and or a system that we could execute given the athletes that we have. And it's where, you know, where the science becomes a little dark science there to some degree.
Have any of the changes you've seen in the game affected your gold medal squared principles? How often are you guys recalibrating the curriculum?
Yeah, it's one of the things that I think we try to understand too is, look, our core audience is the juniors level coach. Mm. It's somebody that's coaching, you know, ninth to 12th graders. And a lot of the experience that we're getting with our advisory staff is from either national teams or high level Division I programs. And so we're always trying to temper what we're learning at those levels and understand, all right, what really can the juniors level coach take away from this and apply? And I think having you reference principles and having those principles that are largely immutable, that really, really helps provide a consistent direction. And it has for us for, you know, the entirety of our, I don't know, the experience of our organization, you know, for 30 some years, we've progressed with the game, but I would say we haven't fallen into the trend traps very often. And so certainly I think some of the things that are coming along and the innovations in how teams are playing, we want to look at that. We want to see if those are able to be integrated and then see what the appropriate application of that is to our core level. But yeah, I would say we're like anyone else where you're kind of like, that was pretty cool. I wonder if my team could do that, you know, or look at the way that's happening. What if we tried, you know, a crossover, you know, what if we swung our arms when we blocked, and what if we did this, and what if we tried to play like that? And so I think being able to have access to really good athletes like we do at some of the higher levels and trying some of those things is fun. But again, we always have to kind of temper our enthusiasm when we start talking to the juniors level coaches.
Right. Well, let's end with a couple listener questions. These are from our patrons at patreon.com/coachyourbrainsout. Leo Keegan asks, what are some of your treasured coaching or volleyball interactions or memories with your dad?
Oh, gosh. You know, I wrote a little Facebook post today. There was an article. The first President Bush and the second President Bush and their kind of interactions with each other and how hard it was for the younger to follow in his father's footsteps and to try to be a president, and just all of the kind of strange influences that he brought with him and his need to be independent. And so it was, there were a lot of those kinds of things when we coached together at BYU. And I look back and I think how many times I probably wasn't as good a coach as I could have been because I was trying to please him or be like him or do something. And it was tough at times. And I think the best, some of the best volleyball moments that we had together were probably behind the scenes, just where he would talk to me about stuff that was more less tactical and technical kinds of things, and more about the relationships that you have with your players. And I can remember there were a couple times where I was struggling with just knowing what to do in certain situations with athletes that, you know, we wanted to push harder or have, you know, bigger goals than they had for themselves kind of things. And I can remember a couple of times just being frustrated and him saying, hey, look, I had this and I had that and I had this and here's what I think you should do. And you remember when you were that age and I did this with you when I was coaching you and how you didn't like that. Well, think about that. Just, you know, he was always pretty smart about all that stuff. There was one funny time, wasn't so funny in the moment, but we laughed about it afterwards. In my first year of coaching, Taylor Sander had broken his hand in the middle of the season. And without him, we weren't nearly the same volleyball team. And we were trying to win some matches and we had a nice team, but we needed to play well. And we got in a 5-set match at home against Santa Barbara. And I can remember maybe we were up one or it was tied. And we'd come back. I was like maybe like 12 all in the fifth. And Rob Nielsen and Giuseppe, I think, pitched it to Rob. And Rob said, hey, look, they haven't set their back row in a long time. It was a timeout. We were coming out of a timeout. And we're going to defend them. And they said, we think we should go put two blockers on their outside hitter. And just we'll slide our outside over. And he'll maybe come in on their middle if it's a decent pass. And our outside will take their middle and then we'll go double team their outside. And I, ooh, I like it. All right. That's a good play. We'll kind of roll the dice here coming out of the timeout. And I'm starting to lay this out. I go, all right, we're going to trap in this. And I hear this voice from behind me going, no, 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 no. Get over my shoulder. I'm thinking, who in the world is screaming at me? Like, who would possibly do that? My dad's over there and he's pointing at his chart going, they're going to set the back row. They're going to set the back row. And I don't know what he was looking at, but like Giuseppe and Rob are like back in the back row and shaking their heads going, no, no, they're not. They're not. And I was all flustered. And so I go, oh, okay. All right, we'll just play it straight up. And here we go. And sure enough, they set their outside hitter on kind of this inside set. And if we'd have had two people double teaming, then we probably would have, you know, been all over it kind of thing, but it kind of greased through in the seam and went down. And I just remember looking over at my dad with like just this fury, like, what did you just do? And after the match, he's like, yeah, yeah, that probably just can't happen again. And it's just one of these father-son moments, like, how do you chew your dad out for coming in and, you know, like overriding your calls? You're the head coach and he's the volunteer assistant. We would joke about that later. There would be something going on and he would start to come over. I go, hey, are you going to Santa Barbara me again here? He's like, nope, I'm done with that. None of that. So anyway, it was for anybody that has to follow in their father's footsteps or work with either somebody they've really respected or that they hold in really high esteem. I've got a lot of respect. I've got a lot of empathy for you. It's a tough spot to be in because there's so many powerful emotions and stuff at work. And, I wouldn't have traded it for anything. It was for sure some of the most special times of my life getting to work with my dad. And he was such a bright guy and such a influential guy. And I was lucky to get to spend as many hours of life as I did with him.
Yeah. We didn't get to spend the same amount of time you did, obviously, but he's affected us and a lot of people in so many ways. So
yeah,
thankful for your stories. We just have one more from a patron, from Will Buchanan from Mad Sand Beach Club. He says, I know you resigned to spend more time with your family after successful seasons at BYU. What advice would you give to maintain a healthy work-life balance as a collegiate head coach?
The single best, I think, piece of advice I could give you is just set up some structure. Don't leave the family things to chance. Like, hey, we'll go out this weekend if I get some time, because you'll never get some time. There will always be more film to watch, or one of your players will need your help or something will come up. Because if you're like me, you know, if you have free time, volleyball ends up filling it. Or if you have unstructured time, your job ends up filling it. And so I would always just say, create the structure of balance that you want. And if you want a balanced life, build a framework that has balance in it. And so whatever that looks like. The other thing that I would say is really, really important is you have to be able to take care of you before you can be there for your family. And so you have to be in a good place mentally, emotionally, physically in order to really, I don't know, enjoy and be able to be there for your family. And so for me, a lot of what I was doing at BYU was trying to manage stress and trying to, you know, manage the emotional kind of burden that came with coaching in that environment. And so I would say nutrition and sleep and physical activity are way more important than most of us believe. I mean, in coaching anyway, I think the athletes understand that that's important, but you know, one of the things that we do as coaches is we work as if that didn't matter. You know, I'm not going to eat, or I'm going to eat lousy, or I don't need to sleep, you know, kind of thing. And you need that every bit as much as the athletes do. And so make sure that those three things, that sleep, nutrition, exercise are a priority in your life. And then everything you can do to put structure to the balance that you want. If you want to, you know, spend time with your family, then build that into your day and be really rigid about your schedule, and nothing gets to violate the kind of the structure that you put in place. And you don't, there's no flexibility when it comes time to leave the office at whatever hour you choose. You leave no matter what's left, because it'll be there tomorrow. You'll come back and the work will be there and you'll get it done. And at the end of the day, that'll keep you going a lot longer in your profession and keep you happy and keep you better for your players, for sure.
That's good advice. Do you ever see yourself coming back into the college game to coach?
Yeah. You know, that's every time I go back with a team, I just, I love being in the gym, and that's my favorite part of volleyball is just being in the gym, coaching and helping people get better. And I really miss that part of it, and I don't get to do nearly enough of it. It's been fun getting to be with the Dutch women and getting a chance to do a little bit of that. But, you know, a couple months or a couple weeks, whatever I get each summer hasn't been quite enough. And so I think if the circumstances were right, for sure. We've got a good little thing going here with our family right now. I get to spend a lot of time with my daughters, and they're 10 and 12, and they still don't mind hanging out with their dad. And so the 12-year-old's, she's kind of moving on a little bit. Yeah, so she's getting there. But, yeah, we got a good thing going right now, and we get to spend a lot of time together. And that was maybe the other thing that my dad's passing taught me is you just don't know. Like, we thought he was going to live to be 100. His mom lived to be 97. His great, you know, my great grandma, his grandma lived to be 101. He was a total stud. He was lifting and running every day, you know, like in really good shape, eating broccoli for every meal kind of thing. And just, you just don't know what life holds. And so the things that are really important, you know, you're trying to maximize that every single day. And so right now it's pretty good at our house with everything we got going. So, but I do miss being in a gym coaching for sure.
Yeah. Sounds like a good deal. What's can you tell us what's next for GMS?
We got all sorts of really good stuff that we're doing here. We're creating a lot, I think, really important, not important maybe, but useful online material that we're trying to roll out. We're looking, as you know, at expanding into instruction in the beach game. We're going to, I really, really love the group of people that we've been able to develop relationships with on our advisory staff. Just if people come to the clinics that we do, they leave just stoked on volleyball and stoked on coaching. And largely it's because they get to be around these great people like Heather Olmstead, like Courtney Thompson, like Tom Blagg and Jason and Rob and Keegan and Brent, and just all these really, really good people that we've got that are part of the organization now. And so we'll have another full summer of coaching clinics. We're running another big full summer of camps for kids. And a lot of those we hope to include outdoor camps as well. So a lot of good stuff happening, and we're really stoked to be able to be involved with as many programs as we are, and to be able to, you know, kind of talk about volleyball with as many people as we get to every year.
That sounds good. I'm looking forward to seeing GMS make the impact it's made indoor on out on the beach. So I hope we can get that going as well.
Yeah, no, me too.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Chris. This was really good stuff, and really thankful for you sharing all your great info.
Okay, yeah. I love talking with you guys, and I'm sure we'll be in touch. Talk to you soon.